I didn't know I was being positioned until people started asking me questions that weren't really questions. They were confirmations, quiet checks, little pauses at the end of sentences like they were waiting for me to confess to something I didn't know I'd been accused of yet. At work, blame doesn't arrive loudly. It drifts. It settles into rooms before you do. By the time you notice, the story has already been told without you in it. I had been competent for years, reliable. The one people leaned on when deadlines crept too close. I thought that made me safe. What I didn't understand was that competence makes you visible, and visibility is dangerous when someone above you has promised results they can't deliver. He didn't need a problem solved. He needed a reason. And I was close, enough, quiet enough, and credible enough to become it. When he was promoted to supervisor, it felt rushed even to him. You could hear it in the way he spoke during his first weeks. Too many explanations, too much enthusiasm layered over uncertainty. He was only a few years older than me, and we'd started at the company around the same time. Different paths, different departments, but similar tenure. I'd watched him struggle quietly for years, ambitious but not particularly strategic, the kind of person who mistook confidence for clarity. When his promotion was announced, there was polite applause and a lot of exchanged looks. Nobody said anything out loud, but everyone felt the gap between the role and the readiness. I reported to him indirectly. On paper, he wasn't my manager. In practice, he inserted himself into everything. Meetings that didn't need him, emails copied unnecessarily, follow-ups that came too fast. He framed it as support, oversight, alignment. I'd seen this behavior before. It was the panic of someone afraid to be exposed, trying to control the narrative before it escaped him. The first promises he made weren't small. He spoke to senior leadership as if he'd inherited a fully functional system instead of a half-built operation with old data and unrealistic timelines. He nodded through meetings, agreed to targets that made no sense, and volunteered deliverables that hadn't been scoped. Every time he left those rooms, his jaw tightened. He'd come back to our floor and start pacing, asking for updates that hadn't changed since the last time he asked. At first, he leaned on me, not officially, but consistently. He framed his requests casually like we were still peers. Could you take a look at this? Can you sanity check these numbers? I trust your judgment. I want your honest opinion. I gave it because that's what I do. I've always believed that good work speaks for itself, that clarity protects you. That if you're competent, people will notice the right things. The tone shifted slowly. My feedback stopped being welcomed and started being filtered. He'd ask for my assessment and then argue with it. He'd nod while I spoke, then repeat my points later as if they were new ideas. When I corrected him gently, he smiled too widely and said we were on the same page. We weren't. The first warning sign I ignored was how he spoke about accountability. Not in terms of ownership, but insulation. He talked about shielding the team, protecting upward optics, managing perceptions. He used phrases like optics a lot, not outcomes, optics. When timelines started slipping, he didn't adjust expectations. He adjusted stories. He started asking me to put things in writing more often. Not because he needed documentation, but because he needed distance. Emails replaced conversations. CCs multiplied. Language became careful. He'd thank me formally for things he used to take for granted. He'd also start reframing decisions we'd made together as recommendations I'd pushed for. Subtle shifts, plausible deniability. I noticed others pulling back. Colleagues stopped looping me into conversations they used to include me in automatically. Meetings were rescheduled without notice. I found out about changes after they were already implemented. When I asked why, the answers were vague. We thought you knew. We assumed you were aligned. You seemed busy. I was busy. Busy fixing problems that hadn't existed before he started promising solutions. The first time I felt it in my body was during a status meeting with leadership. He presented metrics that didn't match my reports. When I corrected a number calmly, he laughed it off and said there had been a miscommunication. He didn't look at me when he said it. The room went quiet for half a second too long. Then the meeting moved on. No one challenged him. No one followed up with me afterward. I walked back to my desk with a tightness in my chest I couldn't name yet. I told myself it was a misunderstanding, that it would resolve itself, that truth had a way of surfacing. It does, just not always in your favor. Once the narrative started forming, it gained momentum faster than I expected. He began positioning himself as overwhelmed but proactive, diligent but burdened by gaps in execution. He spoke about bottlenecks without naming them, then slowly began attaching my name to specific failures. Not directly, never directly. It was always phrased as concern, as context, as unfortunate limitations. He asked me to walk him through my processes in meetings where I hadn't been told I'd be presenting. When I explained clearly, he interrupted to clarify what I meant, subtly reframing my words. When I pushed back, he smiled and said we were aligned, then summarized my explanation incorrectly. The room nodded. I felt my credibility thinning with every interruption. He began documenting coaching conversations that never happened. I'd receive recap emails thanking me for discussions we hadn't had, outlining expectations that hadn't been communicated. When I replied to correct the record, he'd apologize and say he must have misunderstood. But the email trail existed now, the version with his authority attached to it. I had a choice then: escalate, challenge him openly, or keep my head down and outwork the damage. I chose the third option people like me always choose. I worked harder. I triple-checked everything. I over-communicated. I assumed that if I removed any possible doubt about my performance, the truth would become undeniable. Instead, it made me more useful as a shield. When deadlines were missed, he'd say the strategy was sound, but execution had lagged. When leadership asked where the breakdown occurred, he referenced my team's constraints. When numbers didn't align, he suggested my data inputs were conservative, cautious, risk-averse. He positioned himself as visionary and me as limiting. I noticed how he'd soften his voice when speaking about me, as if he were disappointed rather than angry. That tone is dangerous. It implies reasonableness. It suggests he's tried. It paints me as the obstacle without ever calling me one. The first formal warning came as a surprise only in name. He scheduled a one-on-one with HR present, framed as support, a performance alignment conversation. He spoke for most of it, about expectations, about accountability, about the need for agility. HR nodded and took notes. I listened, stunned, as he described patterns I didn't recognize in myself but could see clearly in him. When I finally spoke, my voice was steady. I presented facts, emails, timelines, data. I wasn't defensive. I wasn't emotional. I was precise. HR listened politely. He leaned back, arms crossed, and said he appreciated my perspective but felt the issue was resistance to change. That phrase landed heavily. Resistance to change is corporate shorthand for noncompliance, for difficulty, for liability. After that meeting, things accelerated. Projects were reassigned without explanation. Access was limited. Feedback loops closed. People stopped asking for my input. When I offered it anyway, it was ignored. My work became invisible unless it failed, and when it failed, it was amplified. I started doubting myself in small ways. Rereading emails to check my tone, replaying conversations to see if I'd missed something. That's the quiet damage of scapegoating. It doesn't crush you all at once. It erodes your footing until you're standing on questions instead of ground. I considered filing a complaint. I drafted it twice, deleted it twice. I knew how this played out. I'd seen women branded as difficult for less. I'd watched systems close ranks around supervisors who spoke the language fluently enough. He was already telling the story. I'd be interrupting it, not rewriting it. The final escalation came when leadership demanded explanations for a missed target he'd personally committed to. He didn't hesitate. He sent a detailed email outlining process failures and oversight gaps. My name appeared multiple times, not accusing, documenting. By the time I read it, replies were already stacking beneath it. Concern, disappointment, requests for corrective action. No one asked me what had happened. They already knew. I was removed from the project within a week. Officially, it was a reallocation of resources. Unofficially, it was a demotion without the paperwork. My responsibilities shrank. My influence disappeared. He stopped speaking to me directly. Communication came through intermediaries, sanitized and stripped of context. I stayed longer than I should have, partly out of pride, partly out of fear. Partly because I needed to understand how easily a reputation could be dismantled by someone who needed cover. I watched him stabilize, not because results improved, but because blame had landed somewhere else. Me, the system accepted the offering. It always does. When I eventually left, there was no confrontation, no reckoning, just a quiet exit and a polite farewell email thanking me for my contributions. He replied last, warm, gracious. He wished me luck. I stared at his message longer than I should have, feeling something between rage and clarity settle in my chest. What stayed with me wasn't the loss of the job. It was the lesson etched into muscle memory. That competence doesn't protect you from someone who needs a narrative. That proximity to power makes you vulnerable when power is insecure. That silence, once chosen, compounds. I've seen him since, in other organizations, other titles, same patterns, different names attached to the fallout. The system keeps rewarding his survival skills. The people he steps over keep quietly moving on, carrying residue they never asked for. I don't tell this story to warn anyone. Warnings assume choice. Sometimes the only choice you get is whether you recognize what's happening before it names you. I recognize it now. The early signs, the reframing, the way promises made above someone's pay grade create gravity below them. I learned that being competent and convenient makes you an easy answer to the wrong question. And once you've been the scapegoat, you don't forget how quickly a room can decide who needs to carry the blame so everyone else can keep their seats.